Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us on this Thursday. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, I'm in the Sunbury Motor Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Game day for the Nittany Lion basketball team that won three of their last four. They'll take on Nebraska tonight in the Jordan Center at 7. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, Dick Girardi and I will be on beginning at 6:30 this evening on WKOK and the Penn State Sports Network. Looking forward to that very much. Still to come, it looks like we're going to get Joe Lunardi maybe next week. Also, we've asked and put in a request for offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead to join us on the show and get a chance for the fans here to hear Joe Moorhead for the first time. Great guy. Really great guy. And somebody that I think, as Joe Susan has talked about, you know, how much respect he has for him. We're working on getting him on the show next week as well. Today, Rob Cooper, Penn State baseball coach, in the next half hour, we'll talk with him. They're actually heading into their second weekend of the season. They're going to take on one of the top teams in the country, South Carolina. They're going to play South Carolina Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Columbia. So they're going to take on one of the top 8 or 9 teams in the country. We'll get his read on that in the next half hour. We're going to talk a little bit about Kirk Cousins, RG3, and the Redskins situation in Sam Bradford as well in this half hour. Also, the issue of court storming. It happened. Arizona lost to Colorado. I'm not really surprised there. Colorado really impressed me. I like them. Josh Scott, their big man. And obviously, I saw Colorado play twice in person this year, including a game against Penn State where they beat the Nittany Lions by a point in Las Vegas. And they're a good basketball team. Josh Fortune, the transfer from Providence, adds something for them from the outside. But there was a court storming that took place when it was over in Boulder. And Sean Miller, the Arizona coach, has been vocal about the issue of court storming. He had strong comments about it. He said, look, I have no problem being a great sport. And this is the 10th time a team has stormed the court in the 11 road losses they've had. He said, eventually, something's going to happen in the Pac-12. He said, an Arizona player is going to punch out a fan, and they're going to punch the fan out in self-defense. He said, only when that happens will everyone take a deep breath and say, we have to do something to protect both parties. He went on to say that Pac-12 officials aren't reacting because it seems Arizona is the only team that constantly is the victim of a rush of fans. And that's probably right, because they've been the standard bearer in the Pac-12 now for probably, well, I mean, all the way back through the Lute Olson years. I mean, that's how far back it goes. But the issue of court storming and field storming, the SEC fines schools for doing it. So in the SEC, if you storm the field, and a year ago when Ole Miss at home beat Alabama, they stormed the field and Ole Miss had to pay a fine. If you storm the court in the SEC, you have to pay a fine. The Big Ten does not have that. But I also have not seen a Big Ten field stormed at any time in football. The way the stadiums are set up now, I mean, it's a pretty good drop to get out of the stands just to get onto the field. And plus now they have police out there, horses and so forth, that will ring the field whenever they think something like that happens. In basketball, you'll see some court stormings, and obviously there was a minor one as far as I'm concerned when Penn State beat Iowa. But in the SEC, they fine schools for field stormings and court stormings. The Pac-12, the Big Ten, they don't do that. And if they want to stop it because they're worried about player safety, then they should probably institute a fine standard. As for field stormings, they used to be here in the 80s. They were tearing down goalposts at Beaver Stadium. You know, they tore down the goalposts when they beat Nebraska, tore down the goalposts when they beat Notre Dame. I remember one game they carried the goalpost downtown on College Avenue. I think it was after the Nebraska game in 82. And they did that for a while, and Joe Paterno became very concerned about it, especially when Yale beat Harvard in a game, and they tore the goalpost down at Yale Bowl. And the goalpost came down in such a way where it hit a female student in the head, and she was hospitalized for months after that. So that became his big concern about that, and they stopped it at Beaver Stadium. Field storming, tearing down goalposts, and so forth. And that's the reason why, because of the liability part of it. You get into these court stormings, it's one thing to go out there and you storm the court and you're jumping up and down around your players, but the other players on the opposing team, they got to get to the locker room. And they should not be hassled in doing so. Now, if you're ever asking if there's ever been a court storming with Penn State playing on the road, actually it has happened. It happened in Michigan and it happened in Wisconsin in a year where Penn State was nationally ranked and they weren't. So I've seen it on the opposite side too. Yes, believe it or not. Coming up, we'll talk about quarterbacks in the NFC East as we continue with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Also next week, Jeff Byers, the play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling. Nate Cobbler from the Sunday Daily Times joining us to talk about the Big Ten Wrestling Championships. That's next week on the show. So we've got things already kicked into the works here to talk about that and much more. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It's Penn State basketball tonight with the Nittany Lions taking on Nebraska in the Jordan Center at 7. Airtime on the Penn State Sports Network and WKOK. News Radio 1070 is set for 6:30 this evening. In other words, 90 minutes after this broadcast extravaganza is over with. Let's get to quarterbacks. Quarterbacks, an interesting thing. The NFL draft, of course, is coming up in late April. The combine's taking place this week. We've had a lot of discussion this week about Christian Hackenberg. But there are other quarterbacks, too, that are going to get a long look. Dak Prescott of Mississippi State. Paxton Lynch of Memphis. Goff of California. Carson Wentz of North Dakota State. They're all going to get long looks this year, but is any one of them an Andrew Luck that you feel can step in and start for you right away? Jameis Winston did last year with Tampa Bay, and essentially so did Marcus Mariota. They both had good rookie years. Can any of these guys do it? Which now brings us to the quarterback situation in the NFC East. The Redskins, RG3's being cut loose. They really had no choice. They have to cut him loose at this point. You want to talk about a guy who, to his credit, never went out, whined, moaned, and complained to the media about any of this with his situation, not playing, kept to himself. I think he only dressed, a couple of times all season. That was it. And now he's going to be cut loose, and there are going to be a couple teams looking at him. We had Brandon Gowton on the show a week ago saying, look, the Eagles might have some interest in RG3. And also, you have the 49ers who have committed now to Colin Kaepernick, but Chip Kelly might have some interest with the 49ers in RG3 as well. That brings us to Kirk Cousins and then the situation with Sam Bradford. Kirk Cousins, of course, contract is up. And with that being up, now what to do with him? They're obviously separated by money and not by years in a situation like this. So there evidently is a chasm between what Kirk Cousins expects and what his agent expects, and what the Redskins expect. Kirk Cousins really had a rock-solid season. Nearly 70% of his completions, he cut back on mistakes, and I thought played at a very high level all season long. And I give him a lot of credit for how he played. He was a big reason why the Redskins got into the playoffs. The Redskins have a very good defense that makes a lot of big plays. And Cousins played, for the most part, mistake-free football last season. QBR rating of 101.6. He threw for over 4,000 yards. He threw 29 touchdowns last season as well for the Redskins. Okay. That's terrific. At the same time, it also is the one season he's had. So what's he worth on the market? I mean, that's going to be the big part. What is he worth on the market? He had 29 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. Now, remember, going into the season, so he ended up, what, a plus 18. He was a minus one on touchdowns and interceptions his first three seasons with the Redskins. Now, that albeit in limited time, he started every game this year for Washington, but he completed almost 70% of his passes. So now you have to make a decision if you're the Redskins as to, is he the long-term answer, or would you like to buy a little time to find out if he puts together another solid season? That's where franchising him comes into play. Franchising a player is kind of a, you can do it, you're allowed to do it. It doesn't put you on the best terms with the player when you do it, but it also buys you a little bit of time. I think Cousins has all the ingredients to be a really good next-level quarterback in the NFL. And when I mean next-level, you've usually got those five or six elite guys, and then there's that next level. For example, I would put Matt Ryan of the Atlanta Falcons at the next level. He'd be that kind of guy, a next-level quarterback in the league. Andy Dalton is a next level quarterback in the league. Kevin doesn't want to hear that because it's always an anti-Andy Dalton rant from him, but in reality, he is that next level kind of guy. That's where I think Kirk Cousins can be. I don't he's not going to be an elite quarterback in my opinion, but he's going to be very, very good. Now the next part is, can you go out and draft yourself a quarterback or sign a quarterback that you think will be better? My initial answer would be no. That's why I think they've got to knuckle down and make a decision, either franchise him or come up with a workable contract that covers the next 3, 5, 6, 7 years, somewhere in there with him. It's a gamble on the part of the Redskins. That's why I would lean more toward a, look, if you're not going to come to the terms that we want, then maybe franchise him, and you, guess what? You got to prove to me one more year that what I saw last year wasn't a mirage, that it wasn't a one-hit wonder. And that's the decision they have to make. Sam Bradford is almost in the same boat. Bradford did okay with the Rams. He had a very good season for the Eagles. Same boat. Is there a quarterback out there that you're going to acquire that's better than Sam Bradford or Kirk Cousins? And I don't see a quarterback out there that's better either on the free agent market, and there certainly is not one in the draft. There is something about playing at NFL game speed that changes a lot of things. I remember talking with Bill O'Brien, and I talked with him several times about this, tapping into his NFL knowledge and asking him as many questions as possible to tap into that knowledge about the jump from high school to college and college to the NFL. And he said, yeah, high school to college. He said, no question. He said, huge jump, huge jump. And he'd look at me, he says, but Jonesy, he says, the jump from college to the NFL, he says, is like going over a canyon. So Kirk Cousins had three seasons to get used to the game speed on the other side of the canyon. And he handled it beautifully this year. 29 touchdowns, just 11 interceptions. He only had 5 fumbles this year, too. So he really kept the mistakes to a minimum and made plays. But again, here's the tough part for the Redskins. Is he that one-hit wonder, or are you now going to see a level of consistency from him that tells you that he is the quarterback? You would love to have had it 2 years ago where he stepped in and played at a really good level and then ascended to this level that tells you now I'm seeing a trend. It's hard for you to say you're seeing a trend with him when it's one season. The other three seasons were rather nondescript. But is there somebody better than him out there? And at this moment, I'd have to say No. That's where the Redskins are in a bind in a box. Eagles, same story. Sam Bradford, really good season for him. There's no question he's better than Mark Sanchez. But is there somebody else out there that is better than he is? At the moment, same answer. No in the free agent, Mark. No when it comes to the draft. Can you draft somebody and put him behind him for a while? Maybe. Is Mark Sanchez better than he is? No. So, again, that puts the Philadelphia Eagles in a box. What do you do with Bradford? And they're going to play a more conventional style under Doug Peterson. You heard Brandon Gauten. No, I'm sorry, Matt Leon. Matt Leon was on the show this week from KYW in Philadelphia talking about Chase Daniel. Now, Chase Daniel set all sorts of records at Missouri, but Chase Daniel's a 6-foot-tall quarterback that has taken relatively few snaps in the NFL. He's a backup guy. There's no book on him. If the Eagles wanted to sign him and put him in the backup role instead of Sanchez, fine, I buy into that. He knows Doug Peterson's system. He understands it. But in a backup role, there's no way I can picture Chase Daniel taking every single snap for the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, that's the fallback plan? No. So at the same time, Bradford's got to be realistic. He's trying to obviously cash in on one very good season. I didn't call it a great season. He had a good to very good season. I thought that Kirk Cousins had a very good season. Not quite great, but very good. Same thing with Bradford. Good to very good season. Less than Cousins, but he's trying to cash in on the one big one. And we'll find out what each wants to do. But I think both teams are in a box because they don't have a body of work in front of them that tips them off as to whether this past season is the direction each quarterback's going in. Or if they're one-hit wonders. I think in Cousins' case, I think he's going to get better and better and better and better. I think in Bradford's case, I think last season might be as well as he can play. Just my thought. Talk a little baseball coming up. By the way, Greg Brown, the Pirates broadcaster on the show next week. Phillies broadcast start next week as well. We'll come back second hour of the show, or second half hour of the show, coming up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Presidents Washington and Lincoln could have never imagined that their day would mean one thing. Huge deals at Sunbury Motors Ford. SMC is celebrating President's Day now through the end of the month with their annual President's Day sales event. Choose from over 400 new Ford cars, trucks, and SUVs with savings up to 11 grand. Pick from over 50 of the stylish 2016 Ford Fusion and take $3,000 off. Plus, get 0% financing for up to 72 months, and they start as low as $19,765. SMC has 75 of the top-selling 2016 Ford Escape with savings of $2,750. Plus, get 0% financing for up to 6 years, and they're priced from just $20,490. Last year, Sunbury Motors was one of the top-selling F-150 dealers in the entire Harrisburg and Philadelphia region, and they're loaded up with over 100 Ford trucks in stock with savings up to 11 grand. See for yourself why more people are heading to Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. Proudly serving all of Central Pennsylvania since 1915, when Woodrow Wilson was in the White House.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So far in the show today, we've talked about Kirk Cousins and Sam Bradford and the bind and the box that they put each franchise in based on one really good season. I'll say this about Kirk Cousins, though. The last three games that he played last season in the regular season against the Bills, the Eagles, and the Cowboys, he had 11 touchdowns and no interceptions. That's not bad down the stretch when you're trying to win the division. And then, of course, about Sam Bradford as well. Each now is trying to get that big contract based on one really good season. That puts a franchise into a bind and a box as to how you handle that. Do you then go out and make the big expenditure and go long-term with them essentially rolling the dice that what you saw is what you're going to continue to get. And we'll talk more about that in the next hour as well. We also talked about the court storming issue. Arizona, Sean Miller upset. He says, look, he said at some point there's going to be a fan's going to be punched out by an Arizona player in a court storming unless the Pac-12 does something about it. The SEC fines. They fine schools if you, and it's like, I think it's something like, a $250,000. It's not a small number. If you storm the field in football or you storm the court in basketball. All right. So that's what we've talked about in the previous half hour. We're going to talk to Rob Cooper, the Penn State baseball coach, here in a few moments. I got South Carolina, one of the top five teams in the country, coming up this weekend for a five-game series. But first, this day in sports history, 1941, the Bruins set an NHL record after going 23 games unbeaten. Their record during that stretch, 15-0-8. But remember, the Flyers beat that when they went 35 in a row unbeaten. 1957, this is a big one. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that baseball was the only professional sport exempt from antitrust laws. Why they are, I don't know. It's a business, but they are. Let's see. Also on this date in sports history, 1989, Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, fired head coach Tom Landry after 29 years with the franchise. And in 2005, it was announced that the Walt Disney Company had agreed to sell the Anaheim Mighty Ducks to billionaire Henry Cimulli and his wife, Susan. His company was the operator of the Arrowhead Pond, which is now the Honda Center, where the Mighty Ducks play their games. They are now known as just the Anaheim Ducks. They dropped the Mighty, and I'm mighty glad they did. All right, fine. That's a Kevin Hurd joke. There we go. Next hour, we'll talk a little bit more about football, about the combine. Can't talk enough football. Can't. That's why we're working on getting Joe Moorhead, the offensive coordinator, on the show next week for Penn State. We're working on that right now to get that done. All right. Greg Brown, the Pirates broadcaster, on the show next week. Jeff Byers on the show next week, the voice of Penn State Wrestling, talking about the Big Ten Wrestling Championships. And Nate Cobbler, Center Daily Times, next week about the Big Ten Wrestling Championships. So we got a lot going on as we take you through the paces of the show. We're going to talk a little bit of college baseball here. Don't often do it, but we're going to do it here with Rob Cooper because the Nittany Lion baseball team, which went 2-2 in the opening weekend, they're going to take on one of the top five teams in the country this weekend. They're going to hit the road, and they're going to play at South Carolina. And, Coop, great to have you on the show, first of all. And you go 2-2, two up and two down in the opening weekend. You've had trouble over the last few years of getting out of the gate. So psychologically, what did that do for your team just to get out of the gate with a couple of wins?
Well, I definitely think it helps, especially when you got 11 true freshmen. So, you know, anytime you can get on the board, that helps. But I'll tell you, Steve, you know, as we've talked over the years since I've been here now, that, you know, kind of trying to change the mindset and the culture of how we do things here. This is the very first time since I've been here that our guys as a group really truly felt like before the game started they were going to win every game.
Right.
And we didn't win all four. But that's a huge shift in mindset and how we do things. And you know, the great thing about it is it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, well, I hope we win, or I hope, you know, as long as we play well, we'll win. No, it was they believed they were going to win all four games, and it was a belief by them and not something just completely forced down their throats by us. So that to me trumps the wins that we got themselves.
What was the common thread that was on the plus side in all four games, regardless of result?
Just how hard we played, our competitive spirit, the fact that the guys, again, that belief rather than hope. And, you know, I know it sounds very kind of, oh, Jedi mind trick-wise, you know, like just, you know, but that's a huge step for us, you know, to believe that, hey, we authentically believe we can win games, and that belief was there throughout the game. Even when, you know, in game one against Army on Saturday, you know, we were up 5-1. Next thing you know, it's 5-4. They have the bases loaded and nobody out, and we pitch out of it. Jack Anderson battles and pitches out of it. And, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, maybe last year or the year before, we might not find a way to come out on top on that game. So just that competitive spirit and that mindset was a common thread.
Timely hitting is always going to be important. I mean, you get guys on base, somehow you got to either move the runner over or get them in. Did you see signs that you have a chance to have some timely hitting, that guys that understand the moment?
Yeah, we did. Actually, I did see signs. We didn't do a good job of it. The first thing I'll tell you is that we got to be a better offensive club.
You're right.
You know, you and I have talked before, and what I mean by that is we got to be able to short game and move guys up. We got to be able to score runs when we're not hitting. So you got to be able to get a guy in from third with less than two outs. You got to be able to sacrifice a guy over. You got to be able to hit and run. You got to be able to take advantage of things they give you, and score runs when you're not swinging the bats well. We didn't do that. But the reason why I say, yeah, we could walk away with a good feeling in our minds about, you know, will we have a chance to be that type of club? I think so, because the mistakes we made or the swings that we took were aggressive rather than tentative. And in the past or on other teams that I've coached, you know, it's been, you know, some of those mistakes are kind of like, well, should I hit? Oh, it's too late. Or should I, you know, and then whereas, hey, I'd rather dial somebody back because they're being aggressive and really kind of teach them how to control themselves in that situation than have to build them up the other way.
The pitching part of it, what did you get out of your starters that you liked? And obviously you had to turn to Jack Anderson in certain spots, and he usually comes through for you. Did you get enough out of the starters just to get going in this process of developing a starting rotation?
Absolutely. Taylor Lemon set the tone on Friday by going six strong innings, full innings. You know, I think he only did that one time last year. And when you can turn the ball over to somebody else in the seventh or in the eighth, you know, then you make your bullpen deeper. Then the next day against Army, Salviati, same thing, six full innings. And then game three, which was also against Army, true freshman Justin Hageman went seven full innings, 90 pitches, 26 of them were balls, the rest of them were strikes. And some of those balls he threw were balls that we purposely called out of the strike zone to try to get guys to chase. So when you have that kind of efficiency, and then and last but not least, the next day, Nick Hedge went five full innings. So when you have that kind of consistency, it really makes your bullpen stronger. Allows us to use a guy like Dakota Forsythe or Marco Borsich or Jack Anderson out of the bullpen, and we were able to do that.
Okay, so this week, what are the points of emphasis this week as you make an adjustment here and an adjustment there?
We got to get better. Using our short game and bunting, we got to get better executing from an offensive standpoint, and we need to maintain that mindset. And then the last thing was, you know, you have to be honest as a group and know that it felt different in our dugout those four games than maybe it has in the past. And then also, look, I make no secret about it. I mean, I want us to be challenged against the best programs in the country, and we're going to go play South Carolina. You know, it's the type of program that if they don't win the national title, they think about firing their coach.
So, right, exactly.
You know, it's what I want our guys going into that to know is we can beat those guys. You know, we have to believe we can to even have a chance to begin with. And so, again, I go back to that honest belief versus hope and wish. And that's the big thing for us to keep doing.
When you play a series against South Carolina, I just use the word series, but that's going to be a total opposite of the question I'm about to ask. Does a series against this team instill a mindset of you must win every half inning?
Yeah, we're trying to win. That's a great thing. We actually talk about it. Our goal is to try to win or tie every single inning. And, you know, if we can do that, then obviously we're going to put ourselves in a pretty good position to win the game by the end of it. But, you know, it really just starts about being connected to each pitch and trying to win pitches. And you know, even if another team does have a big inning, trying to eliminate that and get back into it the next inning. But, you know, it's trying to chop the game up. It's trying to play it in the present rather than holding on to the past the first first couple innings or the last couple innings of what might come. It's playing in the present.
Yeah, because that's something I think a lot of people don't think too much about. They'll look at it and say, oh, you're playing a series at South Carolina. Gee, you know, can they take two out of three? I remember Dean Smith sitting in a press conference with Dean Smith at the start of the NCAA basketball tournament. It was 1991. It was in Syracuse. And they asked, how do you approach the NCAA tournament? And he says, look, we can't approach this in the entirety of six games. We can't. He says, that's too much for anybody to process to win the tournament. He says, what we do is we say, look, we're in Syracuse. We've got two games. Let's win the Syracuse tournament. Then right. Let's win the Meadowlands tournament. He said, because we'll play in those two-game tournaments sometimes. So that's how he broke it down. And sometimes you get into, look, now you break it down even further. Now let's win to the under 16. Let's win to the under 12. That's why I asked you that question about winning every half inning, because the whole deal is too much for anybody to process. And I don't think for anybody who plays, I don't think people realize that.
Right, and we'll even take a look at it like this, and this may be a little bit difficult for some people to understand, because they may go, well, coach, you know, your team's not there yet. But you know, ultimately, our goal is to play a program like South Carolina in a super regional to go to the World Series. Well, that's a three-game series.
Right.
And so this is an opportunity for us to practice team in a super regional. And the way you attack a super regional is you attack it by – you know, trying to win each pitch and trying to win innings. And so, you know, we don't play the game much differently when we play South Carolina or Bucknell or whoever, but that is kind of how we set it up. I mean, I purposely try to schedule these kind of games because, you know, it's where we want to go. It's the type of program we want to eventually be at and be in that position down the road. So we got to get our guys in it and get them to understand what it takes to win a game like that.
Well, that's why you got a South Carolina down there. That's why you got a TCU coming in here in May and so forth, because you're trying to schedule up and tell everybody exactly, look, this is where we're headed as a program, correct?
Exactly. I mean, if you want to play at that level, you got to go and compete against those guys. And, you know, if we're lucky enough to get to an NCAA tournament this year, they're going to send us probably to a place like a South Carolina or a TCU. And, you know, having a team like a TCU, a College World Series favorite this year, come here, you know, it's something that we want to be at, want to challenge our guys with. I mean, I say this all along. I know I can schedule 30 to 40 wins a year. And trust me, there's times where I wish I would do that. But you know what? Like, I want to make our guys better, and I want them to compete. And I want them to find out how good they can be, because you're only going to grow and become better when you're outside your comfort zone.
Coop, thanks so much. Good luck down in South Carolina this weekend.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot, man, as always.
Bet-State baseball coach Rob Cooper. Always great to have Coop on the show. He's going to do some great things here at Penn State. You just get that feeling. All that that background with USA basketball, what he did at Wright State, I have a good feeling about it. Hey, how about Bucknell basketball last night? Double overtime, beat Lafayette 86-83. Chris Haas had 30 points last night. And now they go down to Navy, to Alumni Hall, take on Ed DeChellis' team at 4 o'clock on Saturday with an opportunity to win the Patriot League regular season championship. And thus, they have the opportunity with that to home court their way through the Patriot League tournament. They have a one-game lead on Lehigh right now. And what a win last night. I know they had the luncheon today at La Primavera, which was great, well-attended, and congratulations to them. Look, you have to win. And it tells me a lot. Chris Haas had 30 last night. And it tells me a lot. You go on the road, tough environment, win in double overtime, 86-83, maintain a one-game lead on Lehigh, and now, you know, you control your own destiny. And, you know, when they beat BU on Saturday or on Sunday, they control their own destiny at that point. So you got Loyola, BU, and then Lafayette. They've won all three games in this stretch, and now they've got to go down to take on Navy Saturday at 4, and Ed DeChellis' team, which, by the way, has had a really good year. I think they have 18 wins on the year, Ed's team does. And that will be at 4 o'clock Saturday. They win it, then they will be at Soica for all of their Patriot League playoff games, which of course would include the championship game if they were to get there. But an impressive win last night because they had to win it. Didn't really matter who the opponent was. They had to win it. And to show some guts and to win the thing in double overtime, 86-83, tremendous. And now they've got a game where if they win it on Saturday, and I'm not even going to get into it, like if Lehigh loses, whatever. Look, they win it, you control your own destiny. You win the Patriot League regular season championship, and you get the home court. So congratulations to Nathan Davis's team for getting in that position to do it. Now, the big one, getting over the hump and winning it on the road. But they've won three in a row. They beat Loyola last week. Sunday, they beat BU. Last night, they won at Lafayette in double overtime, and now they've got Navy coming up on Saturday. So that's the story there. And, of course, championship week kicks into another gear next week. In college basketball, the Nittany Lion basketball team has won two in a row, three of their last four. They've got Nebraska tonight. That'll be at the Jordan Center at 7, 6:30 the airtime on the Penn State Sports Network and News Radio 1070 WKOK. Siobhan Shields, the son of Pro Football Hall of Famer Will Shields, playing his senior year. Horrific fall against Rutgers. Was on the floor for 9.5 minutes. Has been out the last four games, did clear concussion protocol yesterday, and has traveled. He is here, and Tim Miles, in all likelihood, will play him tonight. I doubt he'll start, but he will play him. How many minutes he plays and remains to be seen, but you know what? To me, that's good news. I'm just glad he's back, that he's resuming, quote, normal activity. But Siobhan Shields did clear concussion protocol, did make the trip, is expected to play tonight against Penn State at the Jordan Center with a 7 o'clock start tonight and a 6:30 airtime. Penn State, again, winners of three of their last four games and looking for their third consecutive win overall. So Penn State's probably playing its best basketball of the season right now. Bucknell might be playing its best basketball of the season right now. Both teams doing that at this stage. So Bucknell's got their big one coming up on Saturday at Navy. And then when Penn State's done tonight, then all they do is go to East Lansing and take on Michigan State. Michigan State is playing its best basketball of season two right now. They're playing tremendously. Denzel Valentine. You know, it's really interesting about that. I have a vote, as you know, for all Big Ten for football. I have a vote for all Big Ten basketball. And in the preseason, you have to vote a preseason player of the year. And I've always liked Denzel Valentine, but I voted Melo Trimble as my Big Ten preseason player of the year. And then you have to put down 10 players, 1 through 10, that you think will be players of influence. And obviously, Valentine was one. And yes, I put down Brandon Taylor as one of my 10. And it turned out that I feel good about that. I feel really good about that because I think he's been one of the 10 best players in the league. But Valentine, it's interesting how it's played out. Got off to an awesome start, then got hurt, then worked his way back in. His first game back was against Penn State. You could see everything, passing, rebounding, awesome, shooting the ball, rusty. But now he's kicked it into another gear where he is without a doubt the leading candidate for Big Ten Player of the Year. Basketball coming up tonight, BJC, Penn State and Nebraska. As Penn State continues its late season run, 7 o'clock the tip-off, airtime set for 6:30 on the Penn State Sports Network and News Radio 1070 WKOK. Just a mere 90 minutes after this show's over with. Second hour of the show coming up next here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.